The tank is full, and we're moving through the Arizona Hour with Sanderson Ford and Rosie on the house.
One of the local Verde Valley wines you can sample is from a winery, Caduceus, named after an ancient symbol for commerce. Started by an Ohio man, there's Ohio again, find its way back into the broadcast for a fourth or fifth
just so we can get in trouble.
Consecutive week.
We apologize for everything bad we ever said. Sorry.
Born James Herbert Keenan, who's from Italian winemaking ancestry, although his path to winemaking was not direct. According to online articles and Wikipedia, wrestled at Mason County Central in Michigan, attended Kendall College of Art and Design in Grand Rapids, served in the Army, studied at West Point, jiu-jitsu trained. He's been a B-roll character in films, TV shows, and documentary. Multi-instrumental, playing guitar, bass, keyboard, drums. His biography is titled A Perfect Union of Contrary Things. He's best known by his stage name, Maynard James Keenan, and a singer of a heavy metal band called Tool. Before he was naming wines after his mother, like Niagara del Judith, he was singing songs dreaming about L.A. being taken out by a tidal wave. I think a fantasy a lot of native Arizonans have shared. And now a local winemaker in Arizona. But back to our cowboy topic for the day. You can't talk cowboy without talking rodeo.
There's a bucking horse fraternity at the fairground. You stay on for eight, you'll pull a check. You fall off them when they're running straight. You stick to them when they break in two. Maybe that's your talent, Jimmy.
What's next?
We get you in a buck and shoot.
Is there like a mechanical bull or something that I could try first? Just
mechanical bulls are for drunk chicks at the county fair. Mash your heels in.
Kid's a natural. That's eight.
That was incredible.
Yeehaw! We finally found something you can do well, Jimmy. You'll be up to your neck in buckle bunnies in no time.
Wait, what's a buckle bunny?
If you're permanently incapacitated, you have the option of ordering medical staff to not resuscitate should you go into cardiac arrest.
Sign it, Jimmy. You don't want to be strapped to a bed for the next 40 years. You get put on your ass out there, and you're able, get up and get out of the arena. These people didn't pay to watch you lay in the dirt. Pray like hell and hold on. I look at that cowboy in the chute gate there and give him a nod.
Hey, what just happened?
Hey, you just won, cowboy.
Yes! And all your time on a horse, did you ever look at one of the cows you were herding and said, I should get on that?
No, not me. No. We've all done it. I got on a bull once years ago. And, you know, they say if you want to practice to ride bulls, start riding bareback horses and put 50 pennies in your mouth. And when you've lost all your sense, then get on a bull. No, thank
like
you. No, thank you. A lot of great. The guy who wrote the foreword for my book, Gary LeFou, is in the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. So I know a lot of bull riders, and I have family that are into bull business that bring livestock to all different events. So it's a great part of rodeo.
So you just like opening layers here. You're an author too, in your book, you said?
Oh, yeah. Actually, HarperCollins, I had a book published in 2010 called Cowboy, The Ultimate Guide to Living Like a Great American Icon. And it's my take on the American cowboy. I've always thought, because of John Wayne and John Ford, as much as I love them, people got the wrong impression about what we do. Cows, the way you make money is you put them on a scale. The heavier they are, the more money you get, bigger the check. If you chase them and they sweat and they lose water at 8 pounds a gallon, if you upset them and you get them back to the headquarters and they're off on their feed and water, then you put them in a trailer and they're going to lose 10% weight in the travel anyway. We got to try and bring them in heavier than when we found them.
It makes much more interesting TV, though, when you chase them. You know.
Yeah, I've never shot a gun or chased a cow. Yeah.
Have you, in all your college classes of introducing the public to being a cowboy, north of Cave Creek on the ranch, have you ever come across Curly?
Yeah. And his ghost. Yeah. Superstition wilderness. If you ever want to close to stuff like that, go to the superstitions. There's some strange goings on. I used to go every year for a vacation up to Rivas Ranch.
Yeah, okay.
And there was always something. We take a 10-day vacation, and just between the hair on the back of your neck standing up, and I didn't even want to go there, but yeah, it's you'd say I'm crazy.
And Arizona's the roping capital of the world. Do you guys do any team roping?
I think 85262 is the number one, or 85331 is the number one heaviest concentration of ropers in the United States Team Roping Association. Quickly followed, and if they haven't been surpassed, by Wickenburg. Yes. And that's if you want to ruin your life. Cocaine would do not a good job. I know so many, I can't tell you, a handful, maybe two handfuls of guys that started roping. Next thing you know, they're single. They haven't seen their kids, and they live in their truck because it's a disease.
Can we talk a minute about, Rocco, you were just sharing how you bring these people together. I was, because what I asked Romy is, what about people who already know how to ride? Do you ever have those? And he said, I don't like to get them. So your philosophy on how you get these people together and what you end up with at the end.
You know, when people come to the college, they think it's about the horses and cows, but I know when we start what it's going to be about. And it's a transformation. To do something you've never done before, or you really haven't done, you know, horseback riding and cows, to do it with a group of people you never met before. These people come on Sunday night, Monday morning. Purposefully, there's one shower, one sink, and they have to start working like a team. And then the third thing is that every day they're scared to death. And that makes a memory that stays with them forever. My job is to make sure everybody has the same experience, no matter how well they ride, no matter how scared. You're afraid of heights. You don't want to drop off this cliff. You don't want to go fast. That's my job to do that. So when they're at the end of the day, they're pounding their chest. They're amped up. It's like cowboy cocaine. They just get a kick out of it.
I tell my kids when they're riding, if someone comes up to you and involuntarily starts telling you how to ride, you can block that out. If they come up and say, I have an observation I'd like to share, mm-hmm. or I think I have something that you might want to think about. But when they come up and start telling you indefinitely, here's what you need to do, I say, just tune it out, because 9 times out of 10, that's going to screw you up.
At the college, not only do we do the college, I do a lot of riding lessons, all different disciplines, Western, English. And so that came up a few days ago. Somebody shouted into the arena while my boss, Laurie, is giving a lesson what the person should do with their hands. So later on, not to embarrass anybody, I told the student, I said, when somebody offers you information and you're on your horse and they're sitting outside the arena, stop, get off your horse, hand them the reins and say, show me. Because somebody who knows what they're doing wouldn't blurt that out. The reason they're blurting that out is they want to show everybody else how much they don't know. And that's the usual case. Don't take advice from anybody who's sitting down watching you ride. Take advice from a person who's going to get in, get on your horse, and show you how to do it very quickly. And that's one of the things that makes our business so dangerous. The horses really aren't trained as well as they used to. A lot of the trainers aren't qualified to teach people.
You're talking about as an industry.
As an industry, yeah. What makes it so dangerous is that a lot of people out there are trying to teach people with the wrong, not enough knowledge. And on horses, we used to go to war on horses. There were 1 million horses at least killed in World War One.
Well, and from what I've read, it was 8 million, half the world's horse population. I'm trying to be nice.
1 million is what they say publicly. The United States government sent 5,000 horses a week from the Brooklyn Navy Yards to London, and they went to Europe. People used to, you know, the standard for a broke horse 100 years ago was much higher than it was today.
Well, and Genghis Khan, he was so successful because he discovered the gated horse. So his mounted soldiers were so much more effective with their weapon on horseback than somebody that was loping or trotting.
Wow, look at you. You can sit over here. You know more about horses than I do. Yeah, and it's... Now, if you have a horse, I have a horse that I can take a 50 caliber belt-fed machine gun, put it over his back, again, with the air stuff, and just sit there and go, bum, 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 and he won't even pick his head up. That was the standard for a horse 100 years ago. Now, if you have a horse that passes by a plastic bag that's across the street, Pat Pirelli, level 4. I mean, it's a ludicrous. They use them for school. They use them for work. There's an old saying that the reason church is on Sunday is it took 6 hard days of work before you could put a buggy on the back end of a horse. So they used to get used. Now they come out of a stall 3 times a week for 45 minutes and they're dead broke. Ah, nay, nay, I say.
Well, and I always talk about there's no such thing as a bomb-proof horse.
No, no. There's two kind of horses. One that's going to already buck or one that's going to. End of the story. Dogs bite, cats scratch, horses buck. End of story.
Like you said, it's part of the defense. They are a prey animal.
No, no canine teeth, no claws.
It's our only defense. Run. And I've been on ones that have run. It's not fun. He just holds on tight.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And that's why, you know, people say, well, I don't want to learn how to lope. No, you have to. Well, I don't want to. I'm never going to lope. You don't know that. And if it happens, you better have tried it on your own. I mean, it's just, yeah.
It's a defensive thing. You have to know, you know, all the things that could come and be ready for them.
You're 5 feet in the air.
Yeah.
It's scary. I mean, and then the things you do to save yourself, if you do get scared, you squeeze harder to stay on. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
That means go.
You lean forward. What does that mean?
Go faster.
And then you throw a scream in there. And, you know, and the party's on. And they say, my horse ran away with me. No, he did everything you asked him to do. You know how much chutzpah it takes when a horse spooks to take your legs off and pitch the reins forward? And that horse is going to go, oh, okay, we're not scared. Very few people can do that.
Well, it's like you were talking about earlier. They're so intuitive.
Yeah.
They feel the fear. Right. They feel your tense.
You telegraph that. In other words, I've shown people, if you know, on a horse, this is what somebody relaxed is. And a horse can feel a fly in its back. Mm-hmm. So if your legs are an eighth of an inch closer on each side, they feel that. And that's what I mean when they get on you. Are you relaxed? Are you sitting where you should be? Are you sitting on your seat bones, not on your pockets? There's so much to learn. We have the word cowboy. South of the border, Mexicans had two words, vaquero, which was cowman, and then they had another word was called caballero. So that was a cowboy who knew the finer points of riding, equitation, knowing to when you're posting a trot, you should be on the outside leg of the horse, to understand your leads left and right. I know third, fourth generation ranchers and never even thought about that. They ride so well. But we've always been, because of the boss, Laurie, we've always been concerned with the finer points of equitation with everything else we do.
Well, and you must do a good job, because you told me often you run into people who've gone to your camp and your college, and they've gotten their own horses and gone on to kind of live the dream.
Yeah, you know, right? We changed the world six people at a time. It's a slow process, and if I live long enough, yeah, I'm going to change the world.
So how do you keep your horses from, you know, they're very smart, and I tell people that are fighting with their computer at work, I'm like, your computer's just like a horse. It's going to treat you as dumb as it thinks you are, and it's going to test you every day. And I applied to work at Camp Geronimo, and I applied two places, the 22 range and the horse stalls. And I picked the rifle range over the horse stall because those horses knew the path they were going. You couldn't tell them to do anything. They would just go on their little trail ride and come back. I mean, they were perfectly trained to take this inexperienced rider, go on this little loop, and come back. And it was so boring to me that I opted out of the Wrangler side of things. How do you keep your horses from just being so patterned and trained and not falling into that routine?
The standard for a broke horse and a rider is that you have to be able to walk, trot, canter on the correct lead, back up and open a gate, and then go out by yourself on the trail. If it doesn't do that, your horse isn't broke. There's something wrong with it. So we always change it up. All the horses we have that might go on a trail ride go to the ranch. All the horses that we have that ride Western, we jump them English. All English horses go Western. You have to change. You ever see the barrel horses that don't want to go in the arena?
All the time.
I'm like, take them on a trail. I never trail ride. You need to trail ride. That horse is losing his mind. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.